Welcome back to Ollie Betterswell's downloadable weekly podcast program. The guests this week, are you an Angus Dunnican or an Angus Dunnicant? It's Angus Dunnican! And welcome back to Ollie Betterworth's downloadable weekly with me, Ollie Betterworth. How have you been? It's been so long since series two. We've completely lost contact. A long time no see. How have you been? Hello? Hello? Long time no see. Have you been? How are you? How are you holding up? Okay, well, that was rude. I'm fine, not that you asked, but I'm super happy to be presenting Series 3, another set of lovely interviews with some talented and funny people from around the London comedy circuit. And Episode 1 is a bit of a doozy. I'm really happy with how it turned out. I've got the tremendously talented comedian, actor and improviser extraordinaire, Angus Dunnican is in the studio / kitchen. Angus Dunnican. Joins me, and it was he's a tremendous guest to start off with, and I hope you enjoy it. The interview itself went over an hour, so I'm not going to natter on for any longer, but I hope you enjoy episode 1 of series 3 of the podcast, in which Angus Dunnican joins me to talk about acting, improvising, and Thundercats. Angus Dunnican.
That's my name.
How are you?
I'm all right. Yeah. Yeah. This is, by the way, I meant to say to you, this is actually quite, I like your flat. Not just like the interior of it, which is fine, but the outsidey bit is quite cool as well.
What?
I like the outsidey bit. It's good. It's sort of like...
sort of mental institute,
abandoned mental institute. No, because it's good, because it's sort of... no, cat dropped a thing. It's sort of like... It is modernist, but it's quite late modernist, isn't it? It's not like sort of scary, dumb, big concrete blocks modernist, like brutalist. It's sort of like, it's very late modernist, but like, we're sorry, look, we'll put some red tiles on it, but it's still weird, irregular, concretey looking shapes.
there's one person, because the corridor outside is a misery. It's an awful place to be.
That is properly like, walking down that corridor, I did feel like I wanted to like be rattling a nightstick against the cell doors.
You wouldn't be the first one.
Yeah, exactly. Sort of go and bother Sarah Connor.
There is one person, and I don't know who it is, I've got an idea where they live, who is my hero on this floor, because every now and again, she just does a nice sort of pencil drawing in colour of a nice, colourful, like, bird, right? And she just puts it on the wall and signs it one at a time.
Nice.
She's not interested in building an exhibition.
No. It's just tiny...
Yeah, it's like Bird of the Month Club.
Of the Month Club. But it's also these weird little sort of flourishes against the nothing. You know, it's like the drawing... the drawing of Tim that Dawn does that he gives back to Dawn with Never Give Up written underneath it. Yeah. It's like that, but a bird on your wall.
Yeah, it's like a little, you know, hey, it may be a horrible place to live, but, you know, look at a bird.
Is it actually a horrible place to live, though, objectively, or is it just...
It's very noisy recently.
Oh, really?
Do you think it would be unbearably pretentious of me if next time she puts a bird up to print out... The Darkling Thrush by Thomas Hardy and post it next to it?
I think it
as would, a little thank you.
I think it'd be remiss of you not to write it out longhand yourself.
But yes.
Under the circumstances. I think it would be a bit half-assed to print out.
Comic Sans.
Although maybe that would be good. Maybe that would pathetically that would be a good way to cut the pretension. That would be the sugary donut to the coffee of the pretension.
But it is, I mean, it may be pretentious, but it is also very, very thematically coherent.
No, I'll take that, which is fine. To be honest,
it is the perfect poem for me to put up.
Do you know it off by heart? Are we going to get it? I think we should have it as an Easter egg at the end of this podcast.
I don't know it.
But just to put a kind of tragic, it's the poem I read at my grandma's funeral.
Right.
So it has a place in my heart, but it's, and I fucked it up. I read it
did
out.
You just did you read the Wikipedia page on thrush instead by accident?
No.
And
no.
Ducklings. You read about duckling thrush.
You're going to feel really bad now because I fucked it up because I just uncontrollably sobbed.
Right. No, that's fine. That's what I did at my grandmother as well. When I tried to read a poem, it didn't work. So it's okay.
It was just a terrible thing. But it is, it's about a bird. It describes a horrible, horrible place, and then says, oh yeah, but look, there's this thrush who decides to start singing and chirping against all the gloom, and it's kind of a little, tiny little ray of hope.
No, that's perfect. No, you should do that. I think that's, I'm a big fan of attempting to sort of try and start conversations with people in a kind of weird, artistic, dead letterbox sort of way.
Yeah. Is it creepy, though?
No, because it's only creepy if
I feel like if it was in a rom-com, it would be fine.
Yes.
But a lot of things that are in rom-coms, if you did them in real life, people would call the police.
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, obviously, the thing with the sort of the Bob Dylan placards from Love Actually, I mean, that's a big ask, because he really was reliant upon the fact that she was going to answer the door. What if the bloke had answered the door? He would just be like, did he have, like, a pizza just by the side of the door so that he could be like, hey, how's it going?
What,
pop a helmet on so he's got a kind of disguise kit.
Was that a sort of Italian accent you were proposing?
Hey! Yeah, through the helmet though, so like Bane delivering a pizza effectively.
Why is my girlfriend or wife actually now crying?
No, crying. She takes it with great aplomb, I think, and she just stands there doing her.
Well, of course, because she's got two handsome boys who both want her.
Yes, exactly.
Slip it up her. So lucky girl,
Lucky Keira Knightley.
Every girl's dream.
Oh yeah, that's what they all dream of. Mm. It is Keira Knightley, isn't it?
It is.
For a second, I thought it was Natalie Portman.
It was before anybody respected her as an actress, which I think they do now, don't they?
People seem to have a problem with Keira Knightley, and I've never really understood why.
She tried to take tough roles,
right,
and that was bad.
That was wrong of her.
When she was King of the Pirates,
right?
It was sixth form,
right?
Posh school drama. It was like, rah, we was.
I'll admit her speech isn't that.
Very, very bad.
It's not great. It's a bit. So they won't know what we could do, but you know that's fine. It's she. I don't know. I don't think she's objectively terrible. I just don't. I mean, I've seen her do a couple of duff roles, but I mean, do you know what the worst? The one I always love is. Do you remember? About 10 years ago, there was that thing that was meant to be like the real story of King Arthur, which they try and do every few years. But it was the one with her and Clive Owen in it, and Ewan Griffith, the Welsh guy. So she was Guinevere, but Guinevere was sort of reimagined as this kind of she badass kind of like pagan, sort of like Celtic kind of like woodland warrior person, which was fine, whatever, who cares. But the funny thing about that was that the guy playing Lancelot, the Welsh guy from Fantastic Four, whose name I can never get quite right, he was playing Lancelot and Clive Owen was playing Arthur. And Clive Owen has the emotional range of a deck chair. He's just so stoic. And he's suave. He's suave. I don't know.
Every scene.
He's suave.
Regardless of how inappropriate.
He's suave in the way like a bit of, like I don't know if he's suave. He's just inert.
He'd be suave at his daughter's funeral.
But that's just indifference. That's just like, I don't know.
He'd be looking over his daughter's corpse in the coffin and you'd think, are you trying to seduce this corpse?
Do you actually find him quite, is he, I mean, I've, in fairness, I've never
have
seen
you not seen the croupier?
I've not seen the croupier.
Neither have I. Unbearable.
I watched
the first 10 minutes of it and it was just like faux noir sort of,
right, okay,
oh, I'm so jaded, I just work in this casino and you know it's all about playing the hand you dealt. Fuck off.
He always seems like they used the take where he was still warming up, like when he came in the morning, like he's just handed his coffee to the AD.
That's what suave is.
I don't know.
Half asleep.
No, because like,
that's how George Clooney does it. That's how he has those dreamy eyes. No. He's just very tired.
Whatever, he does the sort of the frowny thing as well. Though he does the sort of the, you know, sort of looking at you.
No, that's him like trying not to fall asleep. He's very, very tired. All
is that the thing? Mm. Oh, that's okay then. I mean, in which case, that bodes quite well for my future career because I'm fucking exhausted all the time.
Yeah, me too. Why? I don't do anything to warrant it.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing.
I feel like you're a lot busier than I am. So what you?
I am quite busy. I do things. I mean, I have to get up in the morning to feed my deal with the animal that I let into my house.
That's a lot. That is a lot.
So there's him. There's him for a kickoff, which is my enormous dog, and I've got to go and scare the. It's really bad having you've got a massive dog because you walk because you sort of become a slight pariah because like sort of mothers become afraid of you and they draw their children closer to them as they walk past
it's
you.
It's definitely the dog.
And as a privileged white male, I'm unused to people being in any it's way fair, suspicious of me. It's not fair. I'm not.
No, because I'm not. Angus, we're not used to it.
Not used to it, mate.
I felt the same way when I put on a little bit of weight and I went to Next and suddenly I couldn't find, because everything was slim fit, they just didn't have anything in stock that fit me. I was outraged.
The bastards.
I am the market. What?
This shop was built for me, and how dare you?
All those other groups, they're used to it.
Speaking of minor tyrannies of men of our incredibly cushy stature, I need there to be a sea change, like, immediately regarding men's trousers. I know that there's been a long... I know we've been in very sort of tight men's trousers land for it seems like a long time.
Not too bad.
I'm not suggesting it looks bad on people. I'm not suggesting that people like can't rock it. I just can't, and I really can't. I just look silly because I've got quite. I don't know. I'm quite.
Is that your opinion though, or is that just other people's opinion? Have you been ridiculed?
I think if I tried to, I've put on skinny jeans, and I have and people have noticeably repressed a smile. And I've done like films and things where like I get there, and they're like, okay, your costume's over here, and they're clearly like, and it's like a no budget film or something like that, or like I was in this really not very good TV series once, and again the costume was clearly like one of them had just run to Primark and bought the generic man outfit of check shirt and black skinny jeans and Converse, you know, just the
bloke,
the now what a man looks like as of circa 2006 until now, and that's just the No one told us that about the future, because we all assumed overalls, but no, the bloke outfit is just black skinny jeans, plaid shirt, and Converse. That's what the bloke outfit is. And I just put them on, and I saw the wardrobe mistress sort of repress a smile looking at me, and not in a kind of like, oh god.
Maybe she was checking you
not
out.
In a hot dang kind of way. No, this was not hot dang. I know hot dang. I've seen it happen.
Directed to other people.
Yeah, exactly. I've seen it. I've been caught in the crossfire of a hot dang. So
I got told recently. I was really surprised about this, that I got one of those hot dangs from, because someone observed it, and he was like, "You did your preview, right?" And there was this very. I mean, I'm spoken for. It's not like I didn't have a missed opportunity or anything.
No.
It just it makes you very paranoid that you're so terrible at reading signals, because apparently there was this, you know, quite lovely young lady who was talking to me, giving me all kinds of signals, and apparently I ghosted her like a prick. And like, apparently my mates described her going from "I would like to go home with you tonight" to "fuck that guy, who the fuck does he think he is" in like 2 seconds.
Even though I know exactly what you mean by ghosted, I just made myself laugh by the fact that
I turned into a ghost.
You aggressively ignored her by pulling a sheet with two holes in it out of your backpack and just
I've got the skin tone for it.
Gliding off. Yeah, well, I mean, in fairness, we're both pretty ghostly.
We're like marble statues. That's how I like to see.
Yeah, I am. I am an Adonis. I'm a Renaissance Adonis.
Absolutely.
I'm a pudgy David. That's what I like to think of myself as.
So you're an actor. You've touched on it sort of tangentially already.
I do acting. Yeah,
you do acting.
Is that a distinction?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Why don't you want to be described as an actor?
No, I like being an actor. No, because I just don't know at the moment, because I'm sort of like because my rent has been paid exclusively through acting for the last 2 years.
Okay.
I've been doing some adverts and things, which is completely...
Sounds like an actor.
I'm a professional actor. I'm making a living from acting, which is more than can be said for most people who have proper...
Who describe themselves as actors.
And who went to drama school and things, which I didn't. I couldn't get into drama school. I tried for years.
And so on one level, yeah, I am. But at the same time, it's weird because, you know, you spend so long self-identifying as a comedian and being like, well, this is what I do.
But do you make your living out of
it? No.
So there's some hypocrisy going on.
There's some massive hypocrisy going on because I like the self-determinism that goes into being a stand-up comedian. Yeah, exactly.
You call yourself it until you are it.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah, you call yourself it until you are it. And also, you are a stand-up comedian irrespective of whether or not it's professionally determined.
You can't really do the same with astronaut, can you?
No, you can't.
Yourself as an astronaut. NASA calls.
Until NASA calls. You can't moonlight as an astronaut. You can't. There are few cosmonautical hobbyists.
There'd be a call from NASA. Can you stop telling everybody that you're an astronaut?
That's the problem with space, isn't it? Because, like, it's just too hard. It's
not very accessible.
It really is massively inaccessible. Like, it's not like that
elitist.
Massively. I mean, that's the thing you kind of have to accept is that obviously astronauts are just the absolute best of humanity, and they get to a point where you always say, oh yeah, but everyone's brilliant and everything. We're all different. You're, yeah, but astronauts, guys, come on.
Are any of them working class though? Do they all go to the posh schools?
Are there any blue collar astronauts?
Is it like the BBC?
Yeah,
probably.
Yeah,
I say fuck them. I'm glad their funding got cut. Did it get cut?
Well, NASA. Well, it did, but I think it's about to go back. Like it's coming back because I don't know if you noticed, but
waste of money.
The Cold War's back, so we'll be doing very well, I think, soon. We are going to be like in the next 20 years, if North Korea can just stop making missiles and start, do you know what? Sod it, space program. Then we are sorted, mate. We'll be on Mars by next year.
Because we do need a new space race, don't we?
Would be nice, wouldn't it?
I haven't had a space race happening while I've been alive.
What's upsetting is that we witnessed the end of like the shuttle program as well. So like we watched like the last sort of attempts at sort of prestige space travel die. There's a video online that I occasionally sometimes you know when you feel quite emotionally backed up and you haven't had a cry for a while. There's a video online that I watch, so it's just so I can have a bit of a weep and just sort of get on with my day. It's like it's weird, you know. It's
like having a wank.
It's like having a wank. Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like grief masturbation, but not even just grief. Kind of like just sort of like majesty. Kind of like and it's a video of
blue ducts.
And it's like, and it's this video of every shuttle launch ever, set to a track by 65 Days of Static. So it's massively sort of epic and ridiculous, and sounds like music to face your destiny to. And but obviously there's two interludes in it, and one of them is the Challenger explosion, and the second one is the sort of what was the second one? Was it Columbus? The second space shuttle? I should know.
Yes.
That. Yeah. Let's say Columbus.
Let's say yes.
It might not be. Everyone writes in.
Definitely is.
I watch that and I just sort of I get a bit weepy. I'm like, yes, our destiny lies in the stars.
Really?
The mobility of human endeavour. Yeah, I get a little bit teary about it. It does get me going a little bit. Yeah, because I kind of think it's quite... Because I feel like that as an endeavour for a species is like the last self-transcendent thing you've got. You know, you don't have religion or anything like that, and you think a lot of any kind of ritualised thing that's supposed to make you feel bigger than yourself or make you feel part of something bigger than yourself you don't have in your life. I mean, you don't have I think that's why a lot of people have children. It's so that they can feel part of the great human tragicomedy story thing. The Fools, exactly. But yeah, so I think space when you sort of key into the romance of it a little bit is like the one thing that is my one little route back to that, which is my one way of bypassing my own cynicism for 5 seconds.
Really?
Yeah, I find it quite useful.
I have the opposite relationship to those sorts of videos. I think, look at the human race being arrogant. Look at them. Look, did they not learn the last time? Look, all these wars. Tower of fucking Babel mean anything to you, stupid fucks? Look, we'd all be speaking the same language, getting on fine. And yet you think, oh, this is the solution. Fire another rocket up into the heavens. Idiots.
Yeah, no, I know, exactly. I know there's an insane amount of hubris. And do you know what it's like? I'd really like that. My friend Molly told me this story, which really made me laugh. It was about her her.
You know, I think I would have assumed you'd have a friend called Molly.
Molly's good. She's good police. She's
good police.
Yeah. Oh, so did you ever watch the? It's a thing they say in The Wire. Because in The Wire,
is she a policewoman?
No, but she's just a thing they say in The Wire to talk about, like,
mark of respect.
Yeah, like, oh, he's good police. He's natural police. He's like, you know, and it's just become a sort of weird. I forget that I say it sometimes. Sorry. Yeah, I realised that as a turn of phrase that required some context, which I refuse to give you.
you gave it to me.
I didn't send.
You gave it to me immediately.
I didn't send my context terraformation package to the Mars of your brain first to ready the ground.
The reading list.
I didn't send that.
Wouldn't it be great if you could do that at gigs?
It'd be so nice, wouldn't it?
Go away, familiarise yourself. Because there's so much great comedy in things that you just can't do stand-up comedy about because nobody's seen it. Mm. But the comedy, the jokes that you could write would be really funny if anyone would get them.
Yeah, people are quite... Well, I often think, though, that more people in the audience get the joke than they're willing to admit. But because comedy is such this weird sort of scared, huddled group thing, and people sort of looking around, not wanting to put their head above the parapet and obviously laugh at something a lot of the time. That's why I love gigging on Valentine's Day. Mm. I love gigging on Valentine's Day because you only have to make 50% of the audience laugh. Because the other half will laugh because they don't want to... Because they want that night to go well. Because they're either the one who's paid for it, so they're like, yes, good, you're liking the thing I bought. Or they are just wanting to sort of feel like they have something in common with the person. Or, you know, it might be quite early on in the relationship.
I don't think I'd do that on a date. I don't think I'd fake my sense of humour.
Do you not?
I think I'd sit there and I'd think, what are you fucking laughing about? This is terrible. You need to know.
And then you throw down a smoke grenade and moonwalk out of the room.
You don't want to forge a new relationship based on a lie.
Well, in this instance, I think, Ollie, you might be burdened with more principles than most.
Well, I wanted to ask you earlier, because I brought up that you were an actor. You started acting before stand-up, is that right?
Not professionally. No, I mean, I was an actor at school. Like, as you know, I was very much an actor at school. Mm. I started stand-up in my first year out after my A levels, so that I could. So just kind of, because I'd always wanted to do it, and also because I was trying to get into drama school. So in the meantime, I was sort of preparing myself to go to drama school. So I was doing loads of groundwork, thinking, oh, when I get there, I'm going to be a brilliant one. When I strike, they won't know what hit them.
Yeah.
And so I did in addition to starting doing stand up in Sussex, which is where I grew up, I was also taking a year of contemporary dance at a local college. I went back to college after my A-levels and did a GCSE.
I had no idea about your contemporary dance background.
Oh, darling. Somewhere there is a rotting VHS, which is me doing my contemporary dance exam piece, which is a piece that I choreographed that was a dance interpretation of The Poison Tree by William Blake.
Of course it was,
Angus.
Of
course it was. That's somewhere. That's out there somewhere.
I think that would have been my second choice. The Duckling Thrush.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So what I wanted to get at is that I feel as though there's a slight tension between the worlds of acting and comedy, in that if you can sort of tell that someone's an actor on stage, there are some people... Because I think you're sort of quite loud, right?
I guess so, yeah.
You know, you're high energy. You're not some sort of deadpan.
I'm a lot less high energy than I used to be.
Right.
It used to be ridiculous. It used to be like...
Because I remember, I think when I saw you first a long time ago, maybe 5 years ago, and you were very gestural, very... Mm. You had lots of big things, and you were presenting things in a very sort of actorly way. This is not a criticism.
No.
But I feel as though for some people it would be a criticism. And I wondered whether you've ever sort of come across that.
It is, because I feel like there's... I have come across that, because I feel like there's a vein of accessibility being this most sacred thing in stand-up.
Right.
I think to a certain extent.
Accessibility as in being mainstream.
No, not accessible to people. Like, in terms of it being an accessible form for people who want to do it.
Oh, I see.
And there's a lot of people who aren't necessarily performers who are funny guys and writers and people who don't come from that kind of background. And also, you know, majoritatively, people with a theatrical background tend to be middle class upwards. It rubs up against the more bathetic tendency within stand up. You know, the whole point of stand up is that it's self assertive and it's meant to be about calling bullshit on things and bringing things low a little bit and punching up. And so the intimated background, I think, from somebody,
I think that's part of it.
People make a lot of assumptions about you if you have that skill set.
Posh drama bastard,
yeah. Which in my case is completely accurate.
Right. You're not a bastard, Angus.
No, I'm not. No, I know. But no, I am actually. I actually am secretly a massive bastard. Well, just in terms of the amount of it. Well, maybe I'm not. Maybe this is just involuntary thoughts. I just like the amount of. Funnily enough, I've heard a few people talk about this recently in their stand-up, so I've actually felt this is quite normalised. Just, like, walking down the road and just, you're walking past, like, a child, and you just think, I could kick you so hard. I could just do that so hard. And just imagining the first 20 seconds of that universe, just to see what it's like.
I don't think that makes you a bastard, unless you do it.
No, unless you do it. That's the thing, yeah. You are.
I think it makes you a hero, because you had the thought.
You had the thought and then didn't.
Who's the person who doesn't have the thought and doesn't do it? Well, easy.
Okay, we'll come back to what we're talking about in a second, but I read a thing recently that I thought was brilliant, which was, this was last year, and a guy punched a baby in a Sainsbury's.
But what did the baby say?
The baby was chatting shit. The baby was a Palace boy and he was a Millwall man. So, you know, there's an obvious clash there. That's the best attempt at some sort of football based thing I could do.
Yeah, I could see the faith.
It was a massive reach for me. That was a deep pull. This guy had gone up to this baby and punched the baby in a pram, and he claimed it's because he thought the baby in the pram was a doll, and he was doing it to wind up the baby's older sister who was there, and he was doing it as this kind of like, look at me, look at this, I'm punching a baby.
What?
Actually punched a real new, like, relatively newborn baby.
Hey, this doesn't make any sense. So there's a baby loose.
There's not a loose. No, it's not.
Where's the mum?
Okay, so the mum is okay. We're in an aisle in the supermarket. Picture the scene.
Who's this guy? Does he know the family?
I think this guy worked at the supermarket.
And he thought, I'll tease the little girl
by
punching
by
its doll in the face,
pretending to beat up its doll.
It's already inappropriate.
I believe that now the judge was like, I don't believe that you did this as a joke, but I do, because why else would he take such a massive risk? I completely believe that he was doing a bit, but he was definitely doing a bit.
One of his classic
bits. But that's exactly my point. It's like, he would not have done that unless, like, at a family gathering maybe a decade before, he'd, like, in an attempt to sort of curry favour with some whining dickhead child, and sort of beaten up their dolly and it had completely killed with that bit. And so he again saw this situation and thought, I know exactly what to do here.
We've all been there.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
You do an ad lib at a gig, it goes well, you try it again.
And he thought,
this is the
same kind of room that this destroyed last night, instead of being carried shoulder high from the building, you are buried 7 feet below the venue.
Exactly.
And so he did that. But what made me laugh about that is that, so I think he got fined like five. No, he got fined. It was £1,000. He got fined £1,000 for punching this baby, and he was very contrite about it.
Why
was he contrite?
I mean, was there £1,000 of damages done to the baby?
Well, no. That's when the mother said it wasn't enough. He was just awarded damages by the courts. This was the court settlement.
What damages?
Well, you know, there was actually nothing wrong with the baby.
You're going to punch anyone, punch your baby.
Punch your baby.
It's got a soft skull.
It'll fine. It'll recover. It'll bounce back.
Yeah. You're allowed to drop them on the floor as much as you like.
What made me laugh about that most, though, which another comedian pointed out to me when I was sort of talking about this, is that he got charged £1,000. So now we know the market price. Yeah. We know how much
punching a baby.
Yeah. If I wanted to punch a baby, if I wanted to go out to the streets of London right now, yeah. I just need a sweet K in my pocket. Yeah. And sooner or later, market forces will dictate that someone will come forward. Let me drop kick their child into the river. Actually, that's going to cost me more. That's way more. That's at least double. That's at least double. Plus, you know. So anyway, where were we? We got massively sidetracked. We were talking about acting, and we were talking about.
And we talked about babies being.
Being a bastard. Oh yeah, that was it. Yeah, so I think there's an assumption. I think if you have a certain way about you, people tend to sort of switch off from you a little bit, and I have found that, but the thing is, I found that not just with audiences, but I found that more with other comics.
Mm.
I find other comics are incredibly suspicious of it,
really?
Because even if they themselves are definitely from that sort of a background, they're massively in denial about it, and they don't want to sort of. They don't want to yes and that. They don't want to be like, oh yeah, sure. They want to pretend that they're a working class hero, a little bit, a lot of the time, or that they're some sort of like no nonsense pragmatic truth teller.
Yes,
and I which again rubs up against that as a mode.
I think I had some of that in the early days.
Yeah,
some of that pretension. I thought that's what I was going to do. I realized I'm not the guy to do that.
yeah, because well. I mean, there are people who do it, and it can be done very, very well. But
oh yeah, of course.
But it's not the only mode, and the problem is, I think, is that when I was first wanting to do stand up, manifestly posh people were funny because they were an aberration in what was then a sort of general. Cool Britannia consensus of how things were going, because we had a Labour government and everything was right. And even though that was still full of massively privileged bastards as well, we felt like we banished the toffs a little bit. Therefore, having pet ones come and frolic for us.
It's not really fair that the comeuppance has finally come like now when we're around. Do you not?
Well.
People like us have been getting away with it for decades. Why should it be the 2010s where it all really starts to, oh yeah, we're all very much aware of how,
but it's just
how terrible
the 80s,
white
it's just,
people, middle class people.
But it's just the 80s again. It was exactly the same. People. It was exactly the same in the 80s though. It really was. I mean, all the comics then were sort of attempting to refute that particular status quo because it was the same. Yeah. And the fact that it feels like a kind of an emergent thing is just a recency illusion. It's just, you know, it's people who are always thinking, oh, it didn't used to be like this. Yes, it is. Yes, it did. It's just you weren't there.
Yeah.
It's just you weren't there and you had nothing to lose because you were jumping up and down to fucking, I don't know, I was about to say the Klaxons for some reason. That's just because that's the most, that's, they were like the band that were like typified where I was when I was at university, because I went to
I think I know who they are.
The Klaxons, you know, meh, 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 that thing. I don't know about
sounds
music.
Great. <don't> sounds terrific.
I don't
where
know
can that. I pick up their album?
Are you, what's your relationship to music? How do you feel about music in general?
Very, very, very hot and heavy. it's because it's in the early days, you know, that honeymoon period. Music and I can't keep our fucking hands off each other.
Is it just unbelievable? Are you a music doing it in the kitchen, in the garage?
Everywhere. I'm doing things to music I didn't even know I wanted to do.
Music's really
good. I'm not even sure I want them, but no. The option is there. You can find yourself going for it. You know?
Music's pulling stuff out of the drawer and attaching it to itself, and you're just there thinking,
absolutely.
Well, I guess let's just butter up and see what happens. That's
in for a penny, in for a pound.
Nice. Okay. That's nice. It's nice that you're allowing your horizons to be expanded by music like that, and other things to be expanded.
I don't know. My relationship to music. What sort of music I like?
That, but also how when you were growing up, how because I always felt very alienated by the. By the parochial kind of tribal nature of music taste as a thing, as a marker of social belonging. Bugged the crap out of me when I was a kid. Because like last night, I was doing the washing up last night and I very soberly admitted to myself, finally, after 20 years, that my favourite album is definitely the soundtrack to Transformers the movie.
I see. What's the original score, or it's
there's components of the original score by Vince DiCola, a great but there's also the
did you hum a bit of the original score?
Well, the original score. Okay. Okay. Where would we be? So when the Decepticons are attacking, it's like it's got that kind of that 80s kind of drum rhythm to it. It's very synthy.
Okay.
It's very kind of what would now be described as synth wave, which is like, you know, people making stuff that see, that's the thing, is that I now I've now discovered like a whole thing, which is people who like that kind of crap, you know, people who've been emboldened by the fact that Drive came out as a film, and which is
yes how does synth wave compare to vaporwave
is more ambient, I believe,
because it's more like vapor in it.
I think vaporwave is kind of is more sort
even
of
less structure,
less drum machine, less right. I think I'm not sure, I might be talking out of my arse,
more of a dreamscape,
yeah, more sort of more, yeah, precisely, more washy, more like the underwater level in a game you never played.
Tangerine Dream,
maybe like Tangerine, yeah, more like Tangerine Dream, I'd say, which I again fucking love.
Mm.
But Tangerine Dream was not something that you could. I loved Tangerine Dream when I was about 13, and all of these things that have suddenly become.
Oh, take that, Tangerine Dream. When I was about 13,
no, I still do. That's the thing. I still adore all this stuff. I love all this stuff. But like, I've got a massive. It's the most hipster thing ever. But I have this real like resentment because everything I absolutely adored when I was like between the ages of like 9 and 17, was stuff that wasn't really in the popular consciousness at the time because it was all very Britpop and things like that. And I loved everything that had like that just had drum machines and a deep bassy synth drive and all that stuff that's felt like stuff that Giorgio Moroder did, like all the soundtracks that he did to films, which have now like has come massively back around because Daft Punk were like, oh yeah, Giorgio Moroder's our guy, and we're like, yeah, and suddenly everybody kind of went, oh yeah, we like stuff that sounds like this, you know,
right.
And it really wised me up massively because I'm like, oh, but I always, okay, and I feel like I'm now too old to be going out to club nights where stuff like that is playing and having a good time and meeting people. Yeah, because I'm now over it. I don't need the belonging of that, but I'm gutted that I missed. But I'm gutted that that came around as a new thing.
I see.
I wasn't in my early 20s and had the spare energy going to go
too
and enjoy
old.
It.
I've seen really old men at clubs.
Yeah, no,
could be
sure.
One of those guys.
I could be one of those guys, but I'm in a 7-year relationship and I've got a massive dog. And you know, right now we are balls.
Bring him along.
We are balls deep in a rewatch of Gilmore Girls. I'm sorry, that's just where we are. I've actively like not gone out to like open mic gigs because I just thought, yeah, but I could have a massive tea and watch loads of Gilmore Girls.
Really?
Yeah. It's really nice. It's really relaxing.
You've cancelled a gig.
I've not cancelled a gig. I've not cancelled. I've just definitely not
tried to go for an open spot.
I found out that there's a walk up somewhere, and I've gone, do I go and do a walk up or do I stay in here?
Mm.
And
staying here is always
staying here is way better, isn't it?
Didn't you did a did you do a show about that was the theme, right? You did a show about staying in?
Oh, The Great Indoors. Yeah. I loved that's such a shame. I got like see that was a real yes, the short answer is yes. I did a show about how much I liked the house and how much I liked being indoors. Ian Lane's just done a show about that as well, actually. I really wanted to see what it was like.
You got a beef with Ian Lane?
I have no beef with Ian Lane.
Juicy
gossip. If I had beef with that. How could you have beef with
Ian Lane?
Ian Lane
has copied your idea for a show. Is that...
Now, as much as you keep trying to say this, because this will turn up in the edit.
My God. I thought better of Ian Lane than that. I always thought that he was a very sort of original comic mind. And
if I keep laughing over your attempts to do reality engineering.
I've respected his writing, and now I feel... I feel a bit foolish about that, seeing as I know he's basically just Angus Duncan. Angus Duncan light.
He is the thing that Ian doesn't get enough. I want Ian to have more because like he which is a really weird sentence. Enough what?
Pussy.
So much. I want him to be wading upriver through a river through just. I want him to be knee deep in blart. I want him to be, which is a horrible word.
Blart.
I used to say it when I in my town. That was my hometown word for.
I've never heard that one before.
For vagina. That was
Blart.
Blart. Yes.
Like Paul Blart Mall Cop.
Is that a person?
That's a film, starring Kevin James.
Yes, it is. See, again, this is an example of how I don't pay any attention. No, I did do a film about staying indoors, but not film. I did do a show about staying indoors, for which I was soundly trashed by the list. I got properly like the one truly awful review I've ever had.
Got
like,
trashed by the list.
Yeah, which was annoying because they like given me an absolute glower the year before for the first one for my debut, which no one came to see except for them and like another people, someone else, which was nice.
How many stars did they give you?
What for
the Great Indoors? What for the pasting?
The pasting was a tour, but it read like it read like a one. I was about to say. Maybe it didn't. It didn't read like a one because a one is obviously a complete character assassination. It's you know that's anyway. The list gave me a two for the Great Indoors because I think the woman they sent accused me of being. Sort of the playing to the archetypical kind of useless man child. Stereotype. She's like, you know the sort, makes forts in his living room, has the long-suffering girlfriend, right. And things like that. And I was like, and I was.
Doesn't seem very fair to me.
I was insanely hurt by that, considering that I'd tried really carefully not to suggest that, and B,
not to suggest what that you're a man child.
Yeah, well, because I think it was incredibly unfair. Because I think there are a lot of comedians who really lean very hard on the thing about me is that I don't really know how to do anything. I'm an idiot. I'm a man, and they willfully infantilize themselves in front of their audience. And that is something that gets on my nerves a little bit. I know that it works, but I don't do that. And at least I feel like I don't do that. And I got really upset about it. But this is just a good example of how. Only the horrible things. You only remember trauma, don't you? You don't remember happiness. You don't remember all the nice things. I think
some people do.
I'm very jealous of those people.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, the people who
that would be nice.
People,
wouldn't it?
People who can hit record on the nice times would be wicked. It'd be nice that, wouldn't it?
I'm actively deleting the nice times as they happen.
Yeah, well, you've got to make space.
Trying to convince myself that they're not happy times.
Yeah, you've got like an old, you've got a very old iPod, and you're a very very old trauma iPod.
Exactly.
And you've got to keep filling it up with more things to be resentful about.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do like staying in, to be honest. It's like because it's just, I mean, I sometimes think maybe I'm a bit agoraphobic. I mean, what about you? Do you like to hide? I love to hide. Do you like to hide?
I like to nest.
Yeah.
I don't think I would go as far as to say I'm agoraphobic, but I do like to stay in. I find the thought of going out and socialising, even going to a gig, the social element of that. Makes me very anxious.
Well, yeah, I because you get this like I often get this after weddings and things. I get like what feels like a sort of people hangover, and I feel utterly drained because I feel like I've been trying to be sort of more delightful than I actually am. An extra 10%, 20% delightful. and I just feel absolutely exhausted. And I feel that way a lot after gigs. But that's one of the reasons why I decided to start doing improv is just because I felt like I was just falling down this insular rabbit hole, and I needed to sort of open it back out again and be like, no, just you need teach yourself that people are nice again, and teach yourself to think people are geniuses.
Right.
A little bit, which improv is really good for doing, I have to say. That's another thing. I feel like there's this other, as if people aren't suspicious of me enough because of the way I sound and how gesticular I am. There's also that suspicion, I think, now between improv and stand-up as well. I think that's a new thing as well. People are sort of...
Yes.
And people started to get sniffy. Well, mainly it's stand-ups getting sniffy, I've noticed, about improv people.
Yes. It started with me because I went to a gig and there was an improv show beforehand. Full room. And you thought, this is a stand-up gig. It's going to be fucking great. In the second half, going to do our stand-up show. These people are laughing like fucking hyenas at this. And it's not very good. So... this stand-up is going to be tremendous. And then, no, the entire room fucking emptied.
Different.
After the improv. And I thought, what? They're getting
full
rooms. So and then stand-up. Oh, that's not stand-up.
Oh, so you didn't, I thought you were going to say you played to the same crowd and they didn't like
That's what I thought I was going to do. Yeah. But no, they left.
But even if you had, we wouldn't necessarily have gone okay.
How are they getting people in?
Well, I mean, again, it's probably mates and mates of mates. Yeah, and that's why improv.
Let's hope so.
That's why improv's helpful, is because you get more of an audience because it's not just you. You know, you're there as part of a team effort, and so therefore publicising your gig is a team effort. So, it builds. Yeah, and obviously, improv people go and see each other's work, and they're also part of teams and things. So it's effectively like a kind of Ponzi scheme where you're also selling the ability. It's pyramid selling the ability to pretend. Mm. Right. That's kind of how a lot of improv goes. But I have to say that it is nicer. It's a kinder world than a lot of stand up is, and that's where I think the disconnect is. Because you know we're talking.
Yeah, people
about.
Just forgive any old shit, don't they? Because you're just coming up with it on the spot. Easy.
Well, they're hungry for it.
Easy when you've got an audience that are sort of nice and want there to be entertained.
They've got a different head on. They've got an improv audience is primed to recognize any kind of pattern. Mm. The improv audience is like the chimps at the beginning of 2001, and they've just been like gifted a bit of consciousness, and they're like there looking for patterns in their environment, and like yes, 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 and they're and looking for connections.
Bunch of morons. That's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah.
But a stand-up audience is like before that happens. A stand-up audience are sort of weird,
actively resentful,
a gang of like aggressive creatures who want to be dominated. Mm. And if you don't successfully dominate them immediately, they start going and getting angry and sort of shouting at you from across the waterhole.
That's a real audience.
That's a real audience.
These fucking idiots, like doing theatre. Oh, it's easy when they've paid for a ticket and they sit there and have to be quiet the whole time, and they actively want to be there and you're entertaining them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a different audience contract, isn't it?
You want an audience that doesn't really want to be there, has been probably tricked into sitting down into that room, has absolutely no respect for you or willingness to go with you anywhere you take them. That's a real audience.
That's a real
audience. That's when you know you're a good performer.
But that's what we were saying earlier on. That's stand-up fetishizes the gladiatorial element of things.
Yes.
Massively. That's
why we're also macho.
That's the thing. Well, but that's the thing, is that it's an outlet for it's an outlet for it's for the bullied to be macho. It's a way that's the thing. It's
that's why it goes so wrong sometimes.
Yes, it does.
Because I often think that nerds, right, or the bullied people, the downtrodden, who suddenly get a little whiff of popularity and a bit of power, they're not used to wielding it. Mm. So it can go very, very wrong.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
It's dangerous.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
so someone who's never been listened to has always been thought, oh, he's a loser. It has got all that resentment, that victimisation, but is now the establishment, but still carrying all that stuff with them.
Well, even if they actually make it to the establishment, that would be...
Or even if it's not the establishment, but so much they are... They're the success story. Mm-hmm. They're the people that are now popular, are now making money, etc., etc. And they still feel as though the world is out to get them, because it always has been.
Well, that's the thing, is it becomes very difficult to believe in how marginalised someone is if they're allowed on television in the first place. Because seeing as how that seems to be now, just crazy hard to get to. I've drunk piss before by accident. Didn't mean to. It was bad. That was pretty bad.
Was it kind of bad aiming?
No. Although bad aiming has led to some interesting things happen. I pissed on a robin once because a robin startled me whilst I was pissing outside, and I ended up pissing on him.
Oh.
Which I'm quite proud of.
You're a monster.
I am.
I take it back. You are a
bastard. There we go. Pissed on a robin, mate. But the no, I once. I think I was drunk, and there were these empty tinnies in my room, and I went in one of them. I'm not proud of this, but I'm telling you now. I don't know why. And I went in one of them and just went to sleep, and then forgot that that's what I'd done. Completely forgot that I'd done that. And then the next day, it was the summer, so my hay fever was really bad.
You saw
and I
hair of the dog.
No, so I went to take my hay fever pill, but I didn't have any water or anything. And I thought, and I picked up the can, thinking it just still had some old beer in it, and just took a swig, and then and then that was pretty bad. That was pretty bad.
How was it?
How was it? How to describe? It tasted like poorly settled ale. Is the best way to describe it. It tasted like sedimenty off ale, which maybe is partially because of the beer in it. Maybe there was beer in the can still. I'm not sure.
Apparently it's very good for you.
So,
I don't know how that can possibly be true.
Well, there's an idea that supposedly drinking your piss is a way of sort of confronting your renal system with its own work. Like, you've gone into it, it's going, excuse me, Farnsworth, can I have a word? Are these reports you've submitted? I'm afraid they just won't do. It's like, if you shame your kidneys by making it process its own work.
Well, no, I did a very poor.
Do you know what? I could really buck my idea. I could really cross the T's and dot the I's a bit more with this piss. It's the best way. Maybe.
Hang on a minute. Is this a scientific theory you're describing, or just a little bit of
dramatizing a piece of pseudoscience that I've heard.
Pseudoscience.
Well,
so there are actually people who would make that argument. That
I think that's the
idea. Your kidney would look at the piss and go, "This is bad piss."
I think that the idea is,
"Is this me? Is my work?
This can't be me. Surely no. This is not me. This is
I've been distracted recently.
Is your kidney's waking up at the boardroom table after an all-nighter covered in Red Bull and Chinese food, just looking through bits of paper, going, "Oh no, that's just table talk." But I actually do have a kidney condition. I've got weird kidneys that don't work. I have hysterical kidneys, which is not the actual medical name for it.
Very, very funny kidneys.
No. Insofar as that they're prone to panic. I have an autoimmune disease which makes my kidneys get inflamed.
Right.
Because they're a tiny bit damaged, but not damaged enough that would actually impair them. They're fine, they could just get on with it. But because they can't repair themselves, they always want to get inflamed. They're like, we don't know what to do, let's get inflamed! Yay! And then, and so I have to take loads of drugs to stop that from happening, and it's really, it's such a pain in the ass.
What's it called?
It's broadly called nephrotic syndrome.
Right.
But the full name for it is focal segmental glomerulosclerosis.
Blimey.
It's not great. I keep...
How common is it?
Not very at all. It's, I think, like, the only other person that I've ever heard of who has it was a rugby player called Jonah Lomu, who died last year of it. So that's really cheery. Oh. That cheered me right up. That was really, I didn't need that at the time.
You're probably a lot less healthy than Jonah.
Oh, loads. Yeah. And he's, yeah, exactly. He's like
an athlete.
He was a brilliant, like, not just an athlete, but like head and shoulders above others within his own field kind of an athlete. You know, really a very fit man. and he died of it. So yeah,
maybe he was just training so hard he forgot to take his pills.
Yeah, maybe.
That'll be fine.
I'll be fine.
It'll be fine.
I mean, none of us will be fine. That's the nature of.
Apart from me.
Apart from you, you are eternal. You are irrefutable.
Mm-hmm.
You will be here.
Thanks for acknowledging that, because a lot of people
They don't get that, do they? When the final thing dies, it will be your job to put the tables and the chairs and lock the universe behind you when you leave. It won't be that.
Absolutely. Yeah. People always go, "Oh, Ollie, when you die, I'm like, excuse me. Who are you talking to?
What? Because these people, because to you, those people are barely people, aren't they? They're more like sort of mist. Mm. They're sort of like
insignificant.
Yeah, these strange mayflies who it must be very difficult for you
dropping the fucking ocean.
Yeah, exactly. Because you're sort of like a strawberry ginger man, a sort of Dr. Manhattan, aren't you?
Mm.
Like
the Watchers.
The Watchers, yeah, very much like the Watchers. Well, that's being. I observed this the other day.
You can never intervene in human history.
You can't directly, no, that's your curse. You just.
And that's why my career's had very little success. You see, because on purpose.
Very much. It's
my duty.
Your flourishes towards being in the industry are actually against the code of your people. So it's actually very brave of you to have done bits of it in the first place.
I'm turning down offers left, right and centre.
Oh, right. Yeah, exactly, yeah. So,
I've told you a million times, BBC.
I'm a watcher. I secretly have an enormous head and I wear a cloak and I stand on a rock looking at the Earth and other cosmic bodies.
Exactly, the Intergalactic Council would disbar me.
Yeah. The Watchers are a peculiar bunch, aren't they? I always feel like it must be rough for them. Why are they like that?
I know that there is a thing called the Watchers. That's the extent of my
comic book. I'm sure there's a reason, though.
Do they have massive heads?
They've got massive heads, and they've got big kind of like cloaks. And
are they the ones that were talking to Stan Lee in the latest Guardians of the Galaxy?
Oh, yeah, at the end, the post-credit sequence. Yeah, they're the Watchers.
I see.
Yeah, and then there's
handsome devils.
Oh, yeah, they cut quite a dash.
Okie dokie. So you've got a bee in your bonnet that you've brought along today.
Yeah,
you've prepared.
Well, I just... It's not even so much the thing that I just... it's just something I wanted to just talk
something,
to you about.
Something that's on your mind.
Yeah. Because I feel like this is an incredibly unpopular opinion.
Right.
And I've only just been made aware of it. And it's been difficult for me because I used to live with someone whose job it was to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt... really awful, but not one. And also, just sorry, as a quick disclaimer, the thing I want to talk about is not something that I'm completely 100% against all of the time or in notion, but I just dislike the circumstances in which it happens.
I like how you're building the tension.
It's pub quizzes, mate. I don't understand. Oh. Sorry, that wasn't worth it, was it at all? Like pub quizzes. Like them. Because the thing I don't get about pub quizzes, right, is that, like.
You hate pub quizzes.
I don't hate pub quizzes. I dislike the imposition of them apart. Like, in much the same way that if a comedy gig was going on in my pub and it meant that I had to stay quiet.
So these are pub quizzes. You're in the pub.
I'm in the pub.
And then they announce there's a pub quiz.
And yeah.
And that's what you're objecting
and
to.
And then you have to... Well, that's step one. Mm. That's one facet of this irritation diamond.
While the pub quiz is going on, are those who are not engaged in the pub quiz expected to be quiet?
Often they are.
Really?
It seems to me that you are... If you are trying to have your evening, then you are an anathema to those who are attempting to be better than the other people with their bit of paper. And so there's there's that. B, it throws into sharp relief the massive discrepancy between what I know and what one is expected to know. We were talking earlier about music and how I have no fucking clue about music.
Right.
But there are certain musical touchstones that people do know about. There's certain things that everyone listened to growing up, or a lot of people seem to listen to growing up, which you're expected to know about, and I have no clue at all.
To make you feel lonely.
Yeah, it does. It makes me feel lonely. It makes me feel like I've failed for not knowing that.
Because you feel like the pub quiz is basically saying this is the sort of expected knowledge for a human.
Yeah.
And you don't have your knowledge is all different.
It seems that way.
And so that reminds you that you are a freak.
Well, yeah.
That you'll never be accepted by society.
Exactly.
You'll never be complete.
I'll never be complete.
You'll never be a full person.
I've never been to a pub quiz where they've asked me to name all of the Thundercats, for example. Or they've never been to a pub quiz where they...
Could you name all the Thundercats?
I could name all the Thundercats.
Go for it.
Lion-O, Panthro, Tigra, Chitara, Wile E. Kit, Wile E. Kat, and Snarf.
I'm just going to say full marks.
And Jugger.
I have no idea.
Sounds
right. Yeah, they all sounded like cats to me.
Yeah, and I just words nearly happened. My brain scrambled out.
There's no one called Whiskers in there.
There is no Whiskers.
Smokey.
There's no Smokey or Joe Tabby or just, yeah, because like, it doesn't sound as good, does it? When you're sort of
Chitara.
Chitara is much more sexy. It's a much sexier name.
Because they're not cats.
No, they're not.
They're Thundercats.
They're anthropomorphized humans.
Human cats.
Anthropomorphized. Yes. They're just humans with big hair and slightly catty eyes.
Are any of their powers associated with cats?
No, none of them cough up hairballs. None of them...
Are they lightning fast?
They are. Well, Chitara is very fast, but none of them are like grossly indifferent to each other and refuse to eat their dinner.
Do they wield swords?
Lion-O does wield a sword.
It's all coming back to me.
Yeah, it's kind of... It's essentially sort of He-Man, but with just a different rostra of people flying through the air, being amazing. So pub quizzes annoy me, because it's often a type of knowledge which doesn't. I occasionally shine in film and TV, but even then, it tends not to be my area.
I feel the same way about Top Gear.
Yeah,
that is
a world
I don't really care about and will never know anything about. I don't know.
I think within the comedic fraternity, you're not alone in that.
Oh no, I'm not at all. But it is very kind of alienating that there are. It seems like there are a lot of people that know about makes and about all sorts.
Yeah,
we'll never know anything about cars.
I had a thought about this the other day. I was thinking I really would like to be able to have more man conversations where there's a certain type of male questioning you get where they see you with a thing, usually some sort of mechanical object, often a car, and they'll say, "What's that? The 500?" And as long as you go, "It's the 9, actually." And that's all you go, and there's just an exchange of numerical data. That's all there is to it. And it's just like these weird little screeches between sort of mutually similar social status creatures.
The closest I get to that is when someone will ask me what, because I've just got a new phone, and it's like the newest model, and people will ask me what's it called SX or whatever, and I find that incredibly embarrassing to have that conversation.
Because you don't, well, often you don't know, do you?
Well, I sort of know, but I also, it's like, it doesn't matter to me. It's a mixture of feeling as though if I say, oh yeah, it's the top of the line one, that I'm sort of bragging about it.
Yeah.
But also, I feel slightly ashamed that I'm pathetic enough to have a top of the line smartphone.
I see what you mean, these apps
and all these things that I'm, because I'm so important to keep track of all my stuff and it needs to sync across all my devices.
I believe in device apartheid. I don't like them talking to each other.
That's very brave of you.
I don't like them talking to each other.
Because of Skynet.
Exactly, mate.
I find the adverts that talk to you like that very embarrassing as well, because I am that demographic. I do want all of the it would be convenient for me for Evernote to sync across all my devices so all my notes are there whenever I need them, but if an advert goes, and of course it syncs across all of your devices, so while you're on the go you'll never lose an appointment again, as though they're trying to you're really important, you've got stuff to do, we know that, you're out in the town,
I hate it whenever
that sort of flattery.
Yeah, I don't want advertising to make me feel important.
It makes me feel the opposite. It makes me feel pathetic and ashamed. Because someone who goes, yeah, I'm on the go, I need my devices to sync, that's a wanker, isn't it?
Probably, yeah. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Okay, here's one. I used to live with a guy who, he once said to me one of the most incredible sentences I've ever heard. To me, it was just weird. He came in. And his girlfriend had come in like 5 minutes before him. Mm. And I was like, oh, hi. And then he walks in. And I was like, oh, hello, mate. You just go to the shops. He's like, no, I was just sitting in my car. You know that thing when you're listening to a song and you have to let the song finish so that iTunes logs you playing it properly.
Oh.
And I was like, what? Sorry. He's like, no, I don't know that thing.
What?
Could you explain? So this guy was really invested in iTunes having his play data down. So that he wanted to make sure he was punching his card.
Being a responsible consumer.
Yeah, that's really weird.
That's very strange. Is it because it posts to his social media and he wants to show people that he's got good music taste?
Like in the same way that I've got a friend who's really.
I would never set that up.
Why would you do that? And in the same way that I've got a friend who's very. Takes great pride in how many stars he gives things on Netflix, I just don't really get that proud consumer thing. I don't really understand it because I'm an ashamed consumer 9 times out of 10.
Absolutely, it's the only way to be.
Yeah, exactly. I don't.
Listen, we can't defeat capitalism, but we're all up to our fucking necks in the filth. Yeah. It's too late.
Yeah,
it's too late. We lost.
Yeah.
But the least we can do is feel terrible about it all the time. I feel very guilty and avoid eye contact at the Apple Store.
But this goes back to everything that we've just been talking about for the last couple of hours, is that I am really ashamed of my taste. I don't trust people who aren't a bit ashamed of themselves. But whenever I watch anything or anything like that, or which is for me, which is definitely for me, or I read anything that's definitely for me, or a little voice goes off in my head because that's something you would like.
Yes, I know that feeling very well.
You know. And I have like an imaginary snarky housemate who walks in his boxes with a cup of tea, belittling the fact that I'm watching, Hey Arnold in the afternoon.
So the reason you don't like pub quizzes really is that you don't like yourself.
I don't like myself. That's the only reason to do anything. Okay. That's the prime move. No, it's the fact that it's confrontational in terms of that, but also, like, I try really hard not to be a loudmouth know-it-all in the pub, so I resent it when we enshrine one and give and give them a microphone and let them ruin our evening for us. I'm like, surely our entire 20s was spent trying to shed these guys. Why have we now given him that's not fair at all. There are obviously brilliant pub quizzes, and I have been to lovely pub quizzes, which I really, really enjoyed. But
we used to go to a pub quiz quite regularly, and one of my friends befriended the quiz master and then went to a Wheatus concert with him.
A Wheatus concert?
That's right.
You said I was high energy when you first saw me. That was like compared to what I was like when I was 19.
Is that when
I was practically Dylan Thomas.
Yeah. Is that when you first started doing a stand-up? That's your first gig?
Yeah, I was 19, yeah. 19. And I was, to set the scene, I was a lot smaller than I am now.
Is this a university?
No, it was during my year out still. So I was doing my GCSE in contemporary dance at the time. And I had very long blonde hair and a lot of makeup on, a lot of eyeliner. I was very sort of androgyne and weird, and I had a tailcoat on that was covered in badges. I was wearing.
You used to wear eyeliner.
I still do, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah, I'm quite fabulous. I'm quite a fabulous man, and I was wearing a skin tight Marilyn Monroe T-shirt and like I don't know what I was wearing trousers wise, but I was.
You're a goth.
I was more of a new romantic. I think I was deliberately sexually ambiguous.
Right.
Was sort of where I was at.
And yet definitely straight.
And yet steaming with machismo.
Yes.
And naked sexual charisma.
It's not really fair, is it?
No.
To pretend.
No, it isn't. It's not fair.
Well, certainly
for
not.
Most
but,
people, no.
It's not really fair to pretend to be androgynous and sort of undefined or ill-defined sexually when actually you're very, very well-defined.
Yeah, no, it was. It was definitely a trap because I think it was like that just because I'd seen Velvet Goldmine.
Right.
And I liked how... I'd seen Velvet Goldmine and I'd recently discovered Bowie. And I just sort of decided, yeah, let's do that. And also I think there was like one girl who was quite a bit older than me, who was lovely and really nice and very clever, and who clearly had a bit of a thing for blokes who looked a bit like that. And so I think I decided that I would shoot for the back row a little bit.
You dirty dog.
It's because I'm a twat. Everything I've ever done of any worth has been to impress women. I make no bones about that. There's like, you know, it's just completely, not even of worth, just the most of the great things I've done have been sort of veiled attempts at being a certain order of wonderful in someone's eyes.
I went to breakdancing lessons.
You went to breakdancing lessons?
To impress a lady.
Nice.
And it worked.
Nice.
She went out with me for 3 years.
Okay,
got ya.
That's really good. Okay, let's have a quick impressing girls tennis. I attempted to learn Farsi.
Okay, you've won already. Because that's the one and only time I've ever
oh, really?
Done that's, something to impress.
Oh, mate, I've got loads.
Something worth reporting, anyway. As opposed to just sort of suppressing parts of my personality until it's too late, which is what everyone does. But
yeah.
In terms of grand gestures, I mean, I think I once turned up at a girl's house with a sort of love heart balloon attached to me and flowers when I was a very young teen.
Nice.
But other than that, I haven't really done any grand romantic gestures.
Mate,
I feel as though I did them and now I don't need to do them anymore. lucky my girlfriend.
Yeah. For some reason there was a recurrent theme of me attempting to learn languages to impress women.
I actually have on my... I've got a little app, because I'm very busy, I've got an app to keep track of my habits.
Right.
And they sync up to all my devices. But there's one I've got on there that says, learn Italian. And I have to do... I've got the Babel app, because my partner is Italian. I don't need to impress her anymore. Right, But I thought it was... That's probably why there are no ticks along that hole. I haven't sat down with it once yet.
for something to incentivise that particular quest?
Not really. Yeah. I mean, I'm already getting some. So, you know, there's not that desperation.
I attempted to learn a fictional language to impress a girl. And I actually
Farsi
did really well.
Farsi is not fictional.
No, I know Farsi is not... If I said Persian, then it could technically be, because it's obviously historically inaccurate as of 19... Blah, 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 blah. But,
yes.
But I did, in fact, learn Elvish.
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 Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I learned Elvish.
Go on, speak a little bit.
No, not as a spoken word, but language, but as a written language. I was
runes.
Like, I learned... No, not the runes, the Sindarin script, the kind of stuff that's on the side of the ring. That stuff, you know, that really sort of that kind of.
So you can read that.
I used to be able to read that. I'm not sure if I still can anymore.
And who were you trying to impress? Which girl?
Just a girl from my hometown.
This was going to be impressive.
Utterly obsessed with Lord of the Rings, and I like wrote her letters in it, and she was like, "I can't read this." I was like, but.
So she hadn't taken it that far.
No, she hadn't. No, because so
she
like,
just once mentioned, "I quite like that Lord of the Rings movie."
Another example,
like, right? A letter in Elvish, it is
exactly. Yeah, that's like there's just another example of how I'm better at being a fan than most people.
Yeah, that's all you proved. I like this more. Fuck you.
Exactly. Yeah, you don't like it properly.
Have you got anything to plug? Have you got anything planned? Have you got anything that you're excited about in your creative universe?
My creative universe. I suppose the big thing to say is to, if even though we were doing a pretty good job of discrediting improv earlier on, I still do it and I still love it. And you will too if you come down to the Rosemary. No, come to the Rosemary branch last Sunday of every month, and I run an improv show there called Jack Left Town. It's really good fun.
What's it called?
Jack Left Town.
Jack Left Town.
And it's really nice, and we have loads of fun, and it has some really like because it's just down the road from the Free Association, and we get a lot of those guys down. They're ace.
Great.
And so that's. And everybody has a lovely time.
Well, thank you for coming, Angus. This has been a real pleasure. It's been my first one back, and it's really nice to...
No, thanks, man. It's been lovely.
Nice to have such a lovely guest for my first one back.
No,
so
it's nice to be asked.
Coming.
I always like to be asked. I'm not above saying it. It's very important to my sense of self-worth.
Well, I'm glad I could give you that.
Thank you for picking me for comedy football.
All righty. Thanks, Angus. Take care.
Take it easy.
Thank you for joining me for the first episode of the new series of Ollie Bettesworth's downloadable weekly podcast programme with my guest, Angus Dunnican. I hope you enjoyed it. I enjoyed making it. I hope Angus did too. And as always, if you have enjoyed it, please do tell your friends so we can reach a few more people. Or if you're feeling extra kind and generous with your time, please do go onto the iTunes page, give us a like or a rating or a review, whatever it is they do there. That would be tremendous. But until next time... goodbye.